Hello, and welcome to Inverticast. I am Leah. You know me from Tarantulia. And of course, Simon is with me from the Mantis Garden. What's up, Simon?
Not too bad.
Cool. Good to see you. I'm glad your week was okay. Sounds like you had a lot of streaming and well, I don't know. Did you pair up some mantids?
I had some hatches and some lots of other stuff to do. I had to change all this because I had more mantis than I expected,
Oh yeah, wow.
and lots of orders. So yeah, I've been a really busy week. I haven't finished yet. I saw like finished just to do this. So let's
Oh
go.
man. Well, hey, we're here. That's what we do. So, today we are going to be talking about invasive species. And I found a lot of invasive species, and not all of them are inverts. So just a trigger warning on that. We're not only going to be talking about insects. So are you cool
Me,
with that?
a lot less Latin and Greek going to be branded around
Yeah,
here. We don't know the
exactly.
names of them.
Yes, exactly. For sure. So first off, I'll explain what an invasive species is. Or what like entails a creature to become invasive. So it's an organism that is not indigenous or native to a particular region. So they can cause great economic and environmental harm. They're not all non-native species, and some of them are invasive, like food crops that we grow here in the US and stuff. They're not native, but they're not invasive either. So there is definitely a distinguish like difference between the two. So to be an invasive species, they must be able to adapt to the new area easily and reproduce quickly. And so they must also have like harm to property, to the economy and native plants and other animals and fauna in the region. And usually it's an introduced species that are brought intentionally, often as a form of a pest control. Others sometimes are introduced as pets or decorative displays. So we're talking plants and animals and inverts, obviously. Many of them thrive because they basically outperform or outcompete the native species in the area. So they basically like are able to eat up all the resources before the native species do. And so, yeah. But they also sometimes thrive because there aren't any native predators that like are controlling their populations, if you will. So, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think it's pretty good list. I mean, as far as invasive species are concerned in the UK, we do have some.
Yes, you do. I have a list. I've got some in Florida and here in Colorado, and then I have a list from the UK and Australia and Africa. So we'll go through all the little list that I that I procured.
Most of ours are from you. Thank you very much.
Yes, actually. So yeah, well, okay, well then we could talk about the UK first. So in the UK, some of the invasive species that are there include the Japanese knotwood, which was actually introduced by the Victorians in 1886 as an ornamental plant for like their gardens and stuff. But I mean, back then they probably didn't really realize like the invasive nature of this plant, and it just started overtaking other plants and destroying native plants and whatnot. I mean, it's really pretty and all, but it took over pretty
It's
quickly.
really nice to get rid of. We've actually got it in the back garden, which is it's we've got a few invasive species in the back garden that we've not put there.
Wow.
They were just already here, and you just can't get rid of it. You try to pull up stuff, and then it just comes back every year. So
Oh.
there's loads of it, lots of different ones. I mean, hogweed is another one if you want to stick with plants. That one's actually dangerous. That one's burnt you. But yeah, we got tons of invasive species, including your pitcher plant.
Oh yes, the North. I believe they're usually from like the Southeast America, and of course like some parts of South America, the pitcher plants. But yeah, they're invasive. They grow like weeds, and but they're a predatory plant too. So they kind of help with pest control, and that's probably how they got to the UK. I had that on my list, but I had to shorten the list up a little bit just because I was like, oh my god, it's going to be too long.
So many.
There's so two.
It's going to include all of like plants, animals, and insects and stuff.
Yeah.
Just too many to.
It's
to,
too many. To, yeah. Hour.
Just reading a list, start, and then read the list, and then write, that's it. You don't have time to talk about them. But yeah, the major ones, like you're saying, like some of the plants are terrible.
And they clog up, they clog up waterways. They can clog up like water ducts and stuff like that. Yeah. So, I mean, they really can create a lot of havoc. Here in the States, we actually have English ivy is kind of a problem here, because they just climb everything, and they you know what I mean? They just really they infest forests.
This house had a new roof on it,
uh-huh,
14 years ago, because the ivy had lifted the roof off.
Oh, wow.
It's grown up the sort of the back of the house. And then gone underneath the rafters and actually lifted the roof off completely.
Oh, so, my goodness.
Yeah, a new roof, and all the ivy cut down and everything. So, yeah.
Yeah, I believe it.
Ivy is evil, and it grows so fast.
So fast. Yeah,
but
it does.
So
I mean,
being
no, a couple of weeks.
Growing. You know, it's like, I'll get round to that. And you never do, because it's so... You know, it's slow enough for you not to think, I have to get around to that now.
Right. So
it ends up becoming a problem, because then winter comes, it carries on growing.
Yeah.
And you don't go out and notice it. You don't go and see it. You don't go and deal with it. And next thing you know, spring turns up and your roof's gone, or it's pulled all the mortar out of your bricks. Or lifted the flags up on the floor, which it does. it's absolutely terrifying to get rid of. It's for plant. So if you've got somewhere nice to put it, like up a tree, for instance, it looks great. It looks absolutely fantastic. And if you can control it, it looks fantastic. But
right. I agree. I mean, if it's able to be controlled, it looks fantastic on, like I've seen a few buildings around town that have English ivy that just kind of crawls up the side, and it's absolutely beautiful. But it's kind of a big problem for a lot of forests here, and because it just smothers everything,
absolutely, yeah. Covers the tree and kills it,
Okay, so the next invasive species in the UK that I have is the Asian hornet, which is a predator.
The Vespa.
Yeah, I didn't know they were called Vespas.
Yeah, I just know, because the Vespa is the name that the Italians gave to their one of their mopeds, because it sounded like a hornet.
So that makes sense. No, that totally makes sense. I've got a little tau tau, so I don't have a Vespa, but it definitely sounds like a little bee. But they are predator to honeybees and other insects. And they were first detected in the UK in 2016. As far as I know, that the UK tried to take control of them very, very quickly. So there's not a lot of them left in the UK, which is really good. But there could still be like pockets of populations. So clearly that's a problem. Another invasive plant in the UK is the rhododendron, which was first introduced in 1763 for use in gardens. It typically blocks light from other plants, so like trees and stuff can only grow once they get past the canopy of this flower. It's kind of a it's almost like a weed type flower. It kind of just spreads like horizontally, and just like I said, it kind of smothers everything else.
It is beautiful, though.
Yeah, I mean, gorgeous, absolutely, but very bad.
We have one in the garden. But you've got to control it. You just got to keep chopping at it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And it's hard to get rid of invasive plants because you have to, if you are planning on getting rid of them, you have to get all the way into the roots. And some of these plants just, their roots burrow so deep that if you leave even just a little bit of the root, it'll come right back. So yeah, that's crazy. So probably one of your favorites is the American bullfrog, is very invasive in the UK. They feed basically day and night. They do not stop. They carry diseases that have led to an amphibian decline pretty much all over the world. So not just the UK, all over the world. So they carry, you know, amphibious diseases that are just detrimental to other frog and like turtle and amphibious creatures. And then also the gray squirrel, which is another American pest that you guys, they're incredibly pervasive in the UK. They were deliberately released in 1876. Not really sure exactly why, but they carry a pox virus that red squirrels are super susceptible to. Thankfully, there is a nice little pocket of red squirrel populations over, I believe, in Wales or Scotland.
Yeah, we got some up here as well.
Oh, good. Okay.
I should have done this in my garden. Because in my garden, next to rhododendron, is a tree that's covered in ivy that's been killed.
Oh, wow.
And that tree is a great big gray squirrel dray.
Oh, geez.
So we've got the full lot in the garden there.
You do.
So, yeah, we've got all the things you've mentioned so far, apart from the wasp, we actually have in the garden at the moment.
Wow. So, I mean, yeah, you're seeing it firsthand. So that's incredible. Yeah, gray squirrels are thrifty little things. They outcompeted the red squirrels mainly because of that pox virus that they carried. And the red squirrels just didn't have that. They don't have the immunity to it like the gray squirrels do. So that's woof. poor red squirrels. They're really cute.
It was.
Yeah. Okay, let's get into Florida, because Florida is another fun place here in the U.S. that is full of invasive species. I mean, the list was so long, I had to cut it short. But so first and foremost on my list of invasive species that belong in Florida at the moment are Burmese pythons. These are very big Southeast Asian snakes. They're constrictors, so they're not venomous, which is obviously a good thing, because we don't need any more venomous snakes in Florida. We've got plenty of our own. the Burmese python, they prey on endangered birds and their eggs. They prey on frogs and other snakes. The reason that Burmese pythons are so pervasive in Florida is because they were released by irresponsible pet owners who maybe that, because this snake, it's very large, it's about 20 feet. And so they, you know, they release the snake into the Everglades and whatever. And then I know that there was also a facility that housed a lot of Burmese pythons, and a hurricane came through and pretty much destroyed that building, and a bunch of them escaped. So not all invasive pythons are because of irresponsible pet owners. It's also escapees and just natural disasters that happen. And yeah, but don't release your snakes into the wild. Just don't do it. Don't do that, because they have almost obliterated so many like bird species in Florida that are very endangered. And they are kind of a problem too, because Burmese pythons, they like to climb. And so a lot of time they will get up high and in like rafters of houses and stuff, and you might not even know they're there. And then suddenly one day a big old nest of Burmese pythons just falls through your roof and you're like, what? You know, they're scary. I mean, they're so big, they're intimidating and kind of scary. So I can understand how that's kind of scary. But the next invasive animal in Florida would be feral hogs. They were first introduced by early European settlers who brought livestock and everything. So they brought these hogs as food, like a food source, obviously. But again, they escape, they run amok. And so these hogs are basically like decimating plant species throughout Florida. Okay. Another one we have is the cane toads. These toads are crazy. They secrete a toxin when they're bitten. So they are poisonous.
They secrete a toxin. They have glands on their shoulders as well that they can spray.
Uh-huh.
That, which is super scary.
Yeah, right?
There's not even like, I can catch it, you know, they can spray it on you and secrete that venom at you.
Yeah, and that's definitely scary because I don't think it's deadly if you eat it, for sure. Like if you ingest it, you're in some trouble. You're going to need to go to the hospital. Hopefully they can, you know, help you out, pump your stomach, something. But the cane toads, they're actually a problem in not just the United States. They're also a problem in Africa, Australia. So yeah, they're all over the place. And they eat everything and anything. So they decimate, you know, obviously those plant species. Again, they're a big threat to that. All right. So the next one is an aquatic creature known as the lionfish. Say what?
Lionfish?
Yeah, lionfish.
I think of when you say Florida, I always think about lionfish.
Yeah, well, they're not native. They're native to the Pacific Ocean. But they were, obviously people brought them over for their aquariums and things like that. But again, kind of irresponsible pet owners, they released these lionfish and now they are all through the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean. But they, because of their toxic nature, because they are poisonous, they have those very large spines and all of that. Because of that, they don't really have a lot of natural predators. And so therefore, they just spread like wildfire. But again, they're wreaking havoc on endangered fish species that they predate and stuff like that. So
I do believe that Floridians, if that's a word, started catching them, eating them. They're trying to get the markets to sell them as fresh fish.
That's wild.
You know, combat the problem and make a few quid out of it at the same time. So, yeah, it's quite a smart idea. Evidently, they're delicious. Huh. So, why not?
Why not? I mean, if they're delicious and yummy and that can help bring those populations down, I'm all for it. Eat them up. and then we also have the giant African land snails.
Ah, yes.
They're awesome. I mean, I know you have a bunch, but they are pervasive all through Florida since 2011. They pretty much eat like any and all vegetation. And they also carry a parasite that can cause meningitis in humans. So that is kind of an issue, obviously. And of course, they, you know, eating so much vegetation and stuff, they're going to outcompete other snail species that are, you know, necessary to keep the ecosystem in check, essentially.
Just to make a point here.
Sure.
Have to lick the snail or eat it raw. Okay, so don't think going near a land snail is going to give you meningitis. It's not. Okay, you'd have to eat it or sit there licking the slime off it, which I don't advise either of those.
Yeah, don't do that.
That don't do that.
So definitely not.
That, they're pretty safe. You can get salmonella off them as well.
Yeah. Well, in any snake species, it has a risk of salmonella, and that's why.
Snakes, and most lizards,
right.
But they also carry leptospirosis, or they can carry leptospirosis if they're around rats. So, you know, there's lots of reasons to make sure you've got rubber gloves or wash your hands.
Right.
So if you're going to mess with tails, or you're going to collect some in safe Florida, then yeah, wash your mitts. Wash your paws after.
Absolutely. Maintain that personal hygiene, you know?
There you go. PSA.
PSA. Another species that is invasive in Florida would be the Argentine black and white tegu. Probably the same reason that the Burmese pythons are an issue is, you know, irresponsible pet owners. Maybe because they, again, this is a very large lizard species, and it gets 4 feet in, you know, so it's a big lizard. So I think a lot of people, sometimes they just don't realize how big that lizard is going to get. And then it gets too big. Maybe they just can't feed it anymore, take care of it. And then they release it into the wild. And that is just absolutely terrible. There are sanctuaries and places that you can go that will take your unwanted reptiles. And they, you know, they'll buy them from you, or they'll adopt them out, you know, things like that. So just please don't release your animals.
There is, every year in Florida, there is a invasive species amnesty. So if you've got a pet and you don't want it, rather than letting it go, you can take it and it will be looked after.
Yes.
And it's a bit similar to a bug show. You know, if you've ever been to a show or a reptile show, it's similar to that. Loads of dogs, you go with your animal and they'll take it off your hands. And no one will ask any questions, no matter what it is, and they'll just take it off you. It's the amnesty just for the day.
Yep.
And they will look after it. And then you're not releasing it in the wild. PSA number 3.
And not causing a big problem. Tegus have been a threat to ground nesting birds. So a lot of birds that, you know, nest on the ground, they eat the eggs, and then they will also eat the birds. They are a threat to sea turtles, which everybody loves sea turtles, and we know how endangered and threatened they are. But tegus in the wild are a threat to these guys. And crocodile eggs. So the American crocodile is threatened by these tegus, just probably because the eggs. Again, tegus, that's their favorite food, is eggs. So here in Colorado, so we're gonna take it local. Here in Colorado, we have a couple of invasive species that have been a problem, and they are inverts. So what do you know? We've got emerald ash borer. They came from Asia, and they devastate ash trees. They were discovered in Boulder in 2013, and they're still kind of an issue. So a lot of the pine forests up in our alpines and our mountains and stuff have seen a lot of what we call beetle kill. And because of that beetle kill and all of that, the wildfires here are actually especially dangerous, because dead trees equals lots of firewood, essentially. And then the other one is the Japanese tree beetle. Again, it is a pest to hundreds of plant species, but they also really like the pine trees here in Colorado. And so, again, that beetle kill is just, it's devastating, especially when a fire breaks out, because it just catches, and the fire has plenty of fuel.
May I also say thank you very much for the Colorado beetle.
Oh no! is that one that is invasive in the UK?
It was. I think we've got rid of it now. But it was. I remember when I was younger, about the '80s. The Colorado beetle was absolutely devastating crops. So.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah.
It was a nasty piece of work, but.
Yeah. That's crazy.
I think we solved the problem.
It's kind of funny how a lot of places, I noticed something like in this research of invasive species and whatnot, I've noticed that a lot of creatures from the States have gone to other places, and like the UK, you know, with the gray squirrels, and then a lot of other creatures from the same places that are dealing with our stuff, we've got stuff from them that we're dealing with over here. It's really kind of interesting because it almost seems like just a global population of animals and plants. And so, yeah, it's kind of wild. All right. So I'm going to move on to Australia. So there's a few invasive species in Australia. one of them, again, being the cane toad.
Their own fault.
Sorry?
Their own fault.
Yeah, Australia possibly.
They have no sympathy for. They're absolutely their own fault for everything.
Yeah, yeah. And one species was actually really surprising to me was the dromedary camel. So they brought colonists brought these camels to Australia for transportation and construction and things like that, because we know camels can carry a lot, and they're highly adaptable to those desert areas and like that heat, you know, they can kind of withstand all that. Well, apparently a few of them got loose, and now there are wild herds and populations that actually the largest population of these camels in the world are in Australia, where they don't belong.
I do believe they buy them in Saudi Arabia from Australia.
Oh, wow. See, that's wild. Yeah.
Just,
that's amazing.
Insane idea, the thought that the place where the native are asked to buy them from somewhere that aren't native.
Right?
It's just silly. Oh, Australia, yeah. It's a weird place, big place, lots of different habitats. Something's going to get a foothold. Take over.
Yeah, so they have consumed over 80% of the plant species in Australia. So they are a problem just for that very reason there. But wow, what an amazing thing, like that, you know, the places where they're native are buying them from Australia. Yeah. That's a trip. That's truly a trip. Okay. We also got the European honeybee, which was introduced 180 years ago because they wanted to use them to pollinate the, you know, farming plants and stuff that obviously the, you know, European colonizers brought to Australia for food and all that thing. But they became aggressive and they became a threat to the native fauna, which includes the black cockatoo, small parrots, and other small birds and insects like that. So that's really another interesting thing. Like, I don't know. Doesn't Australia have their own pollinators? So I was kind of confused as to why they would need to introduce a species to pollinate. That's weird.
Well, we did it with America as well. I mean, it's just a case of what you're used to. It's like, ah, this works. Let's do it over there. You know.
Yeah.
We just take it with us, and this works over there. That's just humans.
Right? Oh, people. Okay. Yeah. And another species that I was actually kind of surprised was introduced to Australia was the red fox. They are native here in the States, but I'm also not surprised why they were introduced. So they were actually introduced in 1855 for recreational hunting. People like to hunt foxes. It's a very English thing there, I would say. but yeah, they have caused a pretty big decline in ground nesting birds, because, you know, they're predators, so of course they're gonna hunt and, you know, do what they gotta do to survive, and they have gone after the ground nesting birds in Australia. So those are just a few of the species I found for Australia. There's a whole bunch of other ones, like water buffaloes. I believe wild boars is another invasive.
Cane toads, of course.
Yes, cane toads, those guys.
Well, I think the biggest one of all of them is rabbits.
Yeah, the rabbits.
Concerned, which are brought over to hunt again.
Uh-huh.
Spare food is like, oh, Spaxiuntin then, the original ones, was 25 rabbits were sent over and released. Wow. Thinking it wouldn't be a problem, and within a year there was 5,000 of them.
Jeez.
So, you know, back then you're just thinking, oh, chuck a few rabbits out there and they'll be fine. But there's no winter, there's no breeding season. It's just,
right.
You know, whenever they felt like it, go for it. And rabbits feel like it quite a lot.
Yeah, they do. Well, there's a verbiage here in the States that I can't say like completely, but you know, there's a saying that we say they F like bunnies.
Yeah.
So, there's a reason we say that.
Yeah.
Or, they spread like bunnies, you know, cause they're always doing that.
We have the same saying. I think you've got it over.
Do you? Okay, good.
I think throughout the world, I think they say that.
They probably do.
I'm so frisky, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rabbits and the other one that you've missed off. Oh, here's a surprise here. You missed this one off. Cats.
What's that? Oh, no, I didn't miss cats. Cats are invasive everywhere. Yeah. I was going to get into that, but cats are everywhere. Everywhere. So, I mean, they are invasive all over the world. There's actually an island in Japan, actually where I was in Okinawa, called, they call it Ghost Island, but it's full of cats. Cats are our favorite companions. Well, one of our favorite companions next to dogs. Anywhere people are, there's cats. So, even I was actually really fascinated by Istanbul, because that is a city that, you know, it's kind of, they've got a lot of cats that are just running on the streets, but people there actually really love them and they take very good care of the cats and feed them. And it's illegal to be cruel to them there. So if people see you being cruel to a cat, a street cat in Istanbul, you will be arrested and charged and all kinds of stuff like that. I think there's a few cities like that. I know there's another one in Japan that they call it Cat Island, legitimately Cat Island, and it's basically a sanctuary for cats. But cats can be really devastating to bird populations and like small rodents. They are, they are essentially mini wild cats. They are only 5%, like their biology and their, you know, like how cats are, they are only 5% different than the actual wild cats. So of all the animals on earth, they are the least evolved from their wild ancestors, if you will. But that means that they are, you know, perfect little hunting machines. They've got little claws and those, their mouths are those huge, you know, canines, and you know, they're built for speed, for jumping. They're built to be able to, you know, detect small rodents underground. They can hear really, really well. And their eyesight is actually also evolved to be able to detect movement. So they don't see color very well. They see things kind of through like almost a yellow greenish hue, but they detect movement incredibly well. That's why, like at home, if you're playing with your cat and you've got one of them wand teaser toys, they love those because the movement, they're just, you know, that's what they go for. So yeah, they are incredibly invasive, and anything that moves, they're gonna attack. So and that's everything.
You think so? I don't.
Maybe not.
I can go on about cats all night, and I can give you numbers and figures and all sorts of things about cats. Did you know, for a fact, that cats, apart from humans, cats are responsible for more things going extinct than anything else?
Yeah.
It's humans first, then cats.
Then cats.
Yeah, and they're not much different from us either, on the devastation scale. So
yeah,
cats are something I would advise anyone, say, oh, I get a cat, please. Don't
keep it inside. get it vaccinated, get it neutered, you know, do what's right.
I just said don't get one. I mean, please, buy a mask.
I mean, I know that you're not a big fan of cats, but I am, and so that's why I'm a fan of cats that are kept responsibly. Again, that's that responsible pet ownership thing where it's like neuter and spay your pets, keep them inside, you know, always have a collar, but make sure it's one of those tearaway collars. That way, if they get caught on something, that it doesn't choke them. But yeah, just be responsible with your pets. This just goes across the board, you know.
That's the reason why I would say to most people, it says to me, should I get a cat? I would say no, because I would say most people are not responsible.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So therefore, I would always advise against it. It's like someone said, should I buy a cobra? And I think, no, you shouldn't.
No.
Who it was who asked, I would say, no, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
You're going to die.
You know, I mean,
you're not responsible enough to look after something like that. So if
yeah,
you can't,
I agree.
Don't have it. And everyone thinks they can because it's a cat and lots of people have them.
Well, and I think a bigger problem too.
That have them correctly.
Well, and I think a bigger problem would be the hybridized breeds of cats, like the Bengals and the Savannahs and stuff. That, for me, that's kind of a issue. I don't agree with it. I think it's really bad for, like, the Bengal is a cross between obviously a domestic house cat and the Asian forest leopard, right? And that hybridizing of those cat breeds, I mean, you're just making a hyper predator. And those cats, you know, even if you get the F4s, you know, like they are purebred Bengal or whatever, they're highly energetic, and so they need to be very active. They need to be wearing off that energy, and it's a daily process. It's not just once a week or whatever. It's every day. You have got to be fulfilling this cat's, you know, a primal instinct of hunt, catch, kill, eat, sleep. That is it.
And kill them as well, which is something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't stand felines. Full stop. It's just
and that's okay.
Mentality. Just drives me people so much.
Yeah.
I can't stand them because of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that mentality. Kill for fun. You know, that's like, really? It's sport for them. It's just like fox hunters.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I would gladly strip down to their underwear and chase them around the field with a stick.
It's you know,
because they're just pathetic people. They're not even people, really. Mm-hmm. I feel the same way about cats. I think cats, if you're going to let them, I mean, not in their natural environment, because that's where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
They're designed to be that way, to live where they live.
Yeah.
So nothing against that, you know?
Yeah, but absolutely.
If people's got one in the house, they let it in, they feed it, then they open the door and it goes back outside again. That's
well, and there's,
after
you know,
cat.
There's, for my cats, you know, they don't really appreciate the outdoors as much as other cats, but I also am one of those cat owners that I spend a lot of time playing with my cats. I make sure that they're, you know, releasing that energy. So if you do get a cat, make sure you're doing your research and doing the things that the cat needs, because then that's going to reduce the chances that your cat is going to be like, I want to go outside, because that's what they want to go outside for. They want to hunt. That's it. Plain and simple. They hunt, catch, kill, eat, sleep. That is it. That's what they do.
So it's the same as any other animal, though. It's just being responsible. It's like saying,
yeah,
responsible
yeah.
owner, do your research, look after
Absolutely.
It. It's supposed to be looked after.
Yeah.
You know, and don't let it go out.
Don't let it go outside. I mean, build a catio.
Yeah.
You know,
it's not from your country, no matter what it is, wherever animal it is. It doesn't natively live in your country.
Yeah.
Don't let it outside.
Yeah,
don't
let
it
outside. Don't do that.
It's just, you know.
It's, yeah. Okay, let's get back on topic.
But anyway, off cats.
Off cats.
Another one. another one I just remembered because you saw Australia, so I'll go next door to New Zealand.
Yeah.
One of the problems they have in New Zealand is the hedgehog.
Really?
Yeah, the hedgehog. The hedgehog was sent from Britain.
Oh, wow.
Because somebody wanted a pet hedgehog. So they got a bunch of hedgehogs sent over. And,
oh, my goodness.
And now they're eating the way through all sorts of like endangered bugs and stuff.
Oh, no.
Because you've got a lot of...
well, in New Zealand... Regions. Yeah, in New Zealand is one of those special places in the world that you can only find certain species there. Yeah. Like, I believe kiwi. The kiwi bird is only native to New Zealand. Yeah. So, yeah,
They eat, because New Zealand doesn't have many predators.
Right.
The birds tend to have ground nests.
Yeah.
So they'll just have, they may die up or whatever, but they'll do them on the ground.
Right.
And the hedgehogs eat eggs.
Oh, goodness. So they're like the tegu.
Yeah, and they'll also eat chicks.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll eat the bugs. Don't get to eat. They'll eat small snakes.
Oh, goodness.
They'll eat frogs. They'll eat small lizards. They'll eat small rodents.
Wow.
So you think of an hedgehog, you probably think about cat food and slugs, because that's what most people think.
Yeah, I actually didn't know they were omnivores like that. So
extreme. Yeah. They will.
Wow.
They will have a go at anything, yeah.
Wow.
If it's small enough, they'll have a go at it. If they can catch it, they'll have a go at it.
Wow. So
it's like people don't realize that's what they are. So can you imagine letting that go in a place that's just not used to having that kind of predator?
Well, you know, and that's why we're covering the invasive species, because any species that is introduced to a place where it's not from, it's going to wreak havoc. I mean, it's going to, you know, the ecosystem there is every ecosystem is fragile in its own way. And so when you introduce something that is just not natural into that ecosystem, it's definitely going to have a detrimental cost. It's going to have these consequences that I think some people don't really take into account. Like the Burmese pythons, I mean, they're eating other snakes in Florida, which means they're eating Florida king snakes, which is native to Florida. They're probably eating water moccasins, or as we call them, cottonmouths.
Yeah.
That's a venomous snake, but the Burmese python has the size. So, yeah, I mean, they're outperforming all the other snakes in the area. And there aren't any natural predators for these Burmese pythons that are going to control the populations, except for people. And unfortunately, that's pretty much what's happening. So, all right, we're going to move on to Africa. There's a few
Africa. Yeah, not even such Asia or anything, but yeah, Africa, yeah.
Yeah, Africa. They have a problem right now with the Louisiana crayfish. So it's they're kind of a type of like shrimp. They almost look like a lobster shrimp kind of thing. They were introduced in 1970 after the native crayfish were wiped out by a disease. So they introduced Louisiana crayfish, but that wasn't the greatest idea because these guys are still doing, you know, they're eating the natural vegetation. They're causing problems with the natural fish species in Africa. So it's an issue. And the Argentine ant, which was accidentally introduced, and they displaced native ant species, but they were accidentally introduced by hitchhiking. And then they house mouse. So a house mouse, which I think here in the States we call them field mice. They're just, you know, regular little mouse but they have been killing native insects and lizards, and they also have been reducing the native bird species, which is really bad, obviously. Again, there's that ecosystem. It's very fragile. So one species goes, it topples the whole chain. And then the next one I have is a native to Colorado. It's called the red ear slider. It's a type of turtle. like a tortoise turtle. But because of their large size, they are out competing native turtle species in Africa. They also are threatening the species there by transmitting diseases that African species are super susceptible to. They were a really popular pet, and I think they still are. But here in Colorado, because they're native, you cannot buy them like a really small size. They have to be like an established juvenile.
Get those. I remember in the 70s and 80s, spiders used to be available in the pet shop. I've not seen one for years and years. So we had a big thing in the UK where we sort of banned a lot of imports of reptiles because it came to light that when it was being shipped over, it was like something like 80% of them died. So there was just stopped it basically because of that.
Yeah.
They said, right, okay, that species does not travel well. We're not selling that anymore. You couldn't get hold of them. I myself used to have an Australian monitor lizard. Now you can't find one for love nor money. There's no way you'd get another one. That was in the late 80s. I managed to pick one of them up.
Yeah,
you won't find it anymore because they just won't import them now.
Well, yeah, because they're too susceptible to a lot of things.
Yeah.
During travel,
there's no vets or anything to look after them. So,
yeah,
you know, if yeah. what we do need is like governments to be. I mean, our government's pretty responsible, to be honest with you, the invasive species. I've got to give them that. They really are, and they do a good job when something comes over, and they get it right away. You know,
they'll agree
right away and deal with that situation, no matter where it is in the country or how widespread it is. They'll deal with it right away and get rid of it.
Right.
Prevent it, but there's a lot of countries out there that are completely irresponsible with it, and the government just whatever.
Well, and I think a big problem with that too is that the legislation that does come out to hopefully prevent the invasive species, they're not doing the research on these things. Like I believe in Canada, it's illegal to own like any tarantulas outside of 5 species. But the problem with that, because again, they want to prevent an invasive tarantula species, but the problem with that is no tarantula survives in the frozen tundra of Canada. So again, like it's not great for the hobby, if you will, and like, you know, kind of that whole thing, because then it just makes everything really complicated as far as that goes. But it's
unfair on them. It's not really a...
It's not a threat. So
they're the same with mantis, you know. They can only have a few mantis species.
Yeah.
And it's like, why?
Right.
You honestly think -20 degrees and mantis is still okay? Or it's like, it's not. It's going to die. And that's why we're not regulated for things, because if anything does escape, it's got a bad day. So
yeah, that's a bad day for a tarantula for sure. I agree. The cold is dapping.
If I had a tarantula escape and it got out of this room, it would die. out of this house. So what's the point of banning it? You know.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Again, it's just that research that people lack. They just don't do. But there are things that we can do here in our home that will help prevent invasive species from becoming a problem in your area. So the first thing that you can do is, if you are going to be purchasing some house plants or maybe plants for your garden, verify that they are not invasive. So that is one thing that is really, really big. Like, don't just go out and get some English ivy and think, oh, it's going to be so beautiful on the side of my house. No, it will overtake everything. So yeah, verify that it's not invasive. And if you do have invasive plants, replace them with native species. That's always the best bet. The second thing that you can do is clean your boat. If you have a boat and you're taking it, you know, to different bodies of water, you know, doing that recreational boating, clean it up real good between between bodies of water. That way you're not transporting bacteria, you know, other plants.
And obviously the thing, it's not a big thing over here because we don't really do the boats, but it's designed for that, isn't it? Clean, dry, and something, isn't it?
Well, wax.
I think clean, dry, clean sort of thing. It's just like if you're taking your boat from one place to another, you've got to clean it, then you've got to dry it. And then you got to do something else. there was a thing for that because it is a big thing just in the USA.
It's an issue, absolutely.
People drive somewhere to a lake or something with a boat, mm-hmm. go out on a day out, bring the boat back, and then go to another lake next time. And then that's so I can imagine it being a big thing.
Yeah, you're going to transport different kinds of algae and bacteria and mollusks and stuff like that with your boat, so it's definitely important to clean up. On that same kind of idea, if you go on hikes a lot, like a lot of people here in Colorado love to hike because we have lots and lots of beautiful hikes, clean your boots before going to new areas because it helps rid like weed seeds and pathogens that, you know, may be cool in one area. But, you know, let's say I did a hike over in at Red Rocks, and now I want to go take a hike over in Minnesota somewhere. Well, the same pathogens and species are not going to be in Minnesota. So I could possibly introduce them just from my boots, from my hiking boots. So don't do that. Make sure you clean those between hikes. And the fourth thing is if you are traveling between different regions. So like if I was going to Mexico or something like that, don't want to pack fruits and veggies while you travel, because they, again, you know, you're going to have hitchhikers that possibly will be in those fruits and veggies. And the same thing with firewood. If you need firewood for camping, buy it locally. That way you're not transporting hitchhikers and pests that aren't native to that region. And number five on my list is volunteer. If you are really adamant about doing something with invasive species, volunteer to be a part of a removal project. There are plenty of them around, and that is a really great way to give back. If you see an invasive species, report it. Make sure that, you know, you take the proper authorities because they have, again, things and ways that they control those populations and try to keep that balanced. And the last thing on my list is probably the best thing that you can do to help prevent invasive species would be to plant native species in your garden. I love columbines. They're native here to Colorado. So if I had a garden, I would probably only plant columbines, just saying, because they're absolutely beautiful. They're unique. They're native to Colorado. And they come back every year. So you plant them once and then boom, you'll have more next year. I love like all kinds of flowers, but not all of them are great for the natural ecosystem. As you guys know, like we kind of already went over some of those species, but make sure you're planting native species in your garden for sure. Anything else, Simon? Did I miss anything?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. Cool. If you're over there and you want to report anything, you can report it to defra.gov.uk. Just type in Google, report invasive species UK. You'll get a direct form to fill in and telephone numbers and all sorts if you really need to deal with it. There's plenty of places. All the universities run identifications. So if you want to ID something first, you can contact the university and they will ID it for you, and then you'll know if you found. That's pretty much just for inverts, really.
Because
everyone knows, you know, if you saw an elephant walking down the street, you'd pretty much guess what it was. But you get things like Spanish moths over here, which are harmless, and they only come over here like on the odd wind. They're no big deal. They come and go, they don't survive. So, you know, but there's lots and lots of places to report invasive species. Fishermen, please keep your eyes open, because there are lots and lots of those American type crayfish that we have year round.
And the carp. Carp is also an invasive species and it takes over.
Is it for you?
I believe so.
Yeah, that carp would be Asian, won't it?
Maybe. But I also know that like walking catfish is an issue in Africa.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. And another thing with that is, you know, cleaning your fishing gear is obviously really, really beneficial to the natural like lake ecosystems and well areas that you fish in. But yeah, cleaning your gear is a really great way to help prevent those invasive species from spreading.
I think you've treated a lot of it like COVID, haven't you? You know, it's
You know, stay 6 feet away.
You know, if you're sensible, it's not don't have to go too much precaution.
Right. I mean, these are really easy steps that people can take that really they cost you nothing. Honestly, like it's really not difficult to do, but they have a really, really big impact in preventing.
I should keep my mouth shut really because I've got quite a lot of invasive species in my garden. that are my fault, you know, through cleaning out.
No. Before you, that's.
Oh, that's no, not no, no, fault. My fault. These are definitely my fault.
Oh, no.
It's mostly isopods. It's just for cleaning, you know, I clean them out in summer, I clean them out in, you know, give them a proper clean in summer.
Sure.
Summer outside. I just generally chuck the substrate when I think I've got everything. And then a year later, I'll go, oh, what's that doing there? You know. Well, it's not too bad, but it's not too bad. It's just my gap, by the look of
it. Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, you've got it under control, you know. I'm sure you're
I keep my eye on it.
I'm sure you're a avid gardener, so it's, you know, it's probably not as big of an issue for you.
It's not too much of a problem.
Yeah, there you go. So, I mean, it's cool. It's all good. But I think the biggest thing that has caused a lot of problems is that irresponsible pet ownership and allowing for those species to be released into the wild and stuff. It's really caused a great deal of damage. And like you said, cats are so pervasive. They, you know, I believe I read somewhere that in one cat's like lifetime, or no, in one breeding season can cause 448 some odd cats. So like, one cat and then her kittens and then the kittens from those kittens in 1 year, you know, like that's a lot of cats. So
the rabbits in Australia, it was like, yeah. I just released these 25 and you know,
yeah, it's next year it's 300 and, you know,
yeah. And the same with the cane toads. The original cane toad order was very much similar to the way I spend mantis. It's just like, if you order 100 mantis, I'll send you a few extra. And that's what they did with the cane toads. They ordered the cane toads.
Oh,
and
wow.
He originally sent them 102 cane toads, which sounds like an odd number. And one died in the post, basically. And so they released 101 cane toads. And now there is hundreds of millions of cane toads. Oh. All from that original 101.
Wow.
So it's scary how fast that they can get to such a ridiculous level.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a new place, because you've got to take a place, you've got no predators, the climate might be better than you're used to.
Right.
You know, it might be missing a winter, which you're used to.
Like in Australia.
This thing, I can do what I want all year round. It's warmer than it normally is, so I'm more active.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is what happens. It just whoosh off the ground. Oh, next thing you know, everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm quite lucky. Living in England, it's, you know, you get excited seeing invasive species because it's pretty rare. It's not a thing that's going to happen. Things here struggle to get a hold, you know, get a grip. Every year someone will say, oh, seen a mantis, and it will hit the main newspapers, if someone sees a mantis,
sure,
like one mantis,
yeah.
So, and then that's come over on some plants from Europe. So it's not really, it's not really even here, you know.
And
get really excited about it.
For sure. But
one of the other ones that you have and we have is the harlequin, which is the ladybird.
Oh yeah.
And which is the, I think it's the Japanese one, it's our Chinese one, Asian. I know it's Asian. And it's a biter, isn't it, as well?
Yep.
But that's one that seems to be getting a foothold here and with you.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right. Well, let's do our shameless plug. We're almost out of here.
It was like carrying on again. So it's like 3 hours straight. Yeah.
It was awesome. It was well timed out. We did great. I covered all the, you know, plot points I wanted to. So good job. Thank you, Simon. What do you got going on this week? What's coming up?
Pairing and posting, I think, this week. Everything's just mad. Again, it's just that time of year where winter's finishing and things start to move again because you're going to slow down in winter.
Oh, yeah.
If it's like -2 outside, it's like, oh, I'm not posting today. I'm not posting tomorrow. Oh, I can't post this week. Up again, you've got that constant, you know, roll again, so you can start sending things out a bit more, so it makes things a little busier.
And
the time when it wasn't busy because it was too cold to post, you spent pairing, so now you're potting up and hatching new things. I'm going to get a few more mantis in this week.
Sounds good. I keep
saying this every time you ask me, might make a video if I get a chance.
Yeah,
like I say, I've been too busy. so I'm struggling to find time to make a video because I do like to do the research before I make the video.
Of course.
You know, just I'm pretty sure I know what I'm talking about for the video, but I like to make sure that I'm not talking rubbish. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I
just imagining it. You know, I like to make sure. But it's in a paper.
It's accurate.
It's in a paper somewhere, I'll say.
I respect that. I respect that a lot because I'm the same way. I don't like to put out any kind of information that's not accurate or correct because, you know, there's a lot of misinformation out there on the web and I don't want to contribute to that. So I'm with you. I'm actually going to be putting out some new videos and stuff here coming up soon because my voice is back. So I'll be able to do those voiceovers and all that fun stuff. I think the next thing that I will be putting out is going to be kind of a short video, but it's basically how I clean my used enclosures. So once I move one tarantula or an impert to like a bigger enclosure, I'm going to show you guys how I clean those old enclosures so you don't have to throw them out. You can save them, and the cleaning goes for pretty much any enclosure. It's awesome. So look out for that.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. That's a good video because a lot of people don't realize that. You know, I've got a mantis in here. It's died. I'll put another mantis in here. They don't realize you know it's a good idea to clean it.
Yeah, you definitely want to clean it.
It's like
it kind of goes along with that invasive species.
Go to Tarantula Leah and give her a salt so you don't miss it.
Heck yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much, Simon. I appreciate it. And of course, check out the Mantis Garden and his channel because he is fantastic as far as information goes. He covers a lot of topics, not just mantises. So check out Simon. He's great. As always, thank you all everybody so much for being here. Thanks for watching. If you liked what you saw, make sure you like and subscribe. Leave us comments. And check us out on all the other audio streaming. And we also have a Discord, and I will link that below. Again, thank you. Bye-bye.
See you later.